Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias!
Hello.
Dunker Nation, let's ride.
He has done it, folks. How was the weekend, good sir?
It was good. How was yours, man?
It was good. Also stressful.
What kind of stress are we talking about here, bud?
A lot of sports related stress. Watching USC's defense against UCLA was a stressful endeavor until DTR just threw the ball away three different times. So that was fun. The Jeff Saturday led Colts almost beat the Eagles, which was why does this team have 3 points through three quarters against the Colts? Didn't like that. They did pull out the dub, so that was cool. Got a little bit of a reprieve earlier today. Marcus Rashford checked onto the pitch, scored within like 8 seconds. That was fun. Were you able to catch U.S. versus Wales?
Yes, I did watch some of the Cup of the World.
I see. Tough way to get a singular point there, but we will keep that moving.
Nah, yeah, a lot of sport. Nah, man, you just can't hit X when the ball's in the box.
Not the Xbox talk. That's amazing.
Now, also, you cannot hit a slide tackle in the box.
Like rule number one of FIFA. Also, while we're on video games, God of War Ragnarok. Tremendous game. Very stressful game. Having fun. Also banging my head against the metaphorical wall sometimes. But we are rocking it out. Let's get into some hoops before I start thinking about the game itself. Anyway. freaking Draugr holes, man. It's terrible. Anyway, everybody is hurt. I guess let's start there. The list of injured players right now includes, but is not limited to, Joel Embiid, who's going to miss the next two games with a midfoot sprain. Ja Morant, week to week with an ankle injury. And this is on top of Desmond Bane already being out multiple weeks with a toe injury. Jimmy Butler's missing the rest of Miami's road trip with knee issue. Damian Lillard's out 1 to 2 weeks with a calf strain. Bradley Beal suffered a quad injury on Sunday. Not sure how long he's going to be out. Russell Westbrook had his thumb looked at and in a wrap. So we'll see what his status is. Cade is out indefinitely. Mike Conley is out for at least 2 weeks. Tyrese Maxey is going to be out for a month for the foot injury. Kevin Love also is dealing with a thumb issue. Poku sprained his ankle in the same game that Ja Morant got hurt. That's a lot. It's too much. Turn injuries off.
Just turn them all the way off. Just turn them off, please. No.
I don't like it. Just a terrible weekend for injuries. So, well, I guess my question is, well, first and foremost, I hope everyone gets better. I think that's a common sentiment. Beyond that, is there a team or teams that you're going to be looking at more closely to see how they navigate these injuries? Or is there any intrigue level for you?
It's going to be interesting for me because of the amount of teams that are going to be going through this almost at the same time, in a sense. It's weird. Usually it's like one or two teams got to figure this out, but it's like a handful. I mean, pull back the curtain. You typed up just that list of people you said took up a page of the doc. So, I mean, I've said it every time that these injuries happen. I do think teams have to find something else. They cannot lean on what was comfortable. The security blanket of sorts has been taken away, and they're going to be forced into finding some things that are going to sustain them going forward, which sometimes can be the hidden positive of an injury situation. My mind probably goes to the Sixers. You have no James Harden. You have no Tyrese Maxey. You have no Joel Embiid for at least a couple more games. This is y'all's chance. Every one of y'all. This is your chance to show up. This is your chance to build something. This is your chance to lock in defensively. This is a chance to get the buy-in back. Whatever you got to do, it's right in front of you. So I imagine Embiid will continue to rise up. But hey, if you're a Shake Milton or a DeAnthony Melton, Matisse Thybulle, and you're trying to say, hey, I need to put a stamp on my minutes, this is your time. Although I got Doc Rivers with a roster like this. Watch out. Just keep it in your back pocket. Memphis? We really gonna test the next man up.
Yeah.
Got no Desmond, no Ja. You've been here before. So again, it's not new. But for Memphis, big picture wise, this is an opportunity to keep building offensively, and you now have to probably lock in more defensively, and there's just certain things you can't lean on anymore. So you're going to have to execute in different ways in a more consistent fashion. And then probably Portland. If Dame's going to be out for a little bit, can you get back to what you were doing? Because technically, philosophically, you lose the big hitter, but you did have a flow of movement and multiple playmakers. So can you kind of get back in that rhythm and get enough on that end? Those are probably the ones for me off the top.
Got you. I am fascinated by what the Sixers are going to look like on the offensive end.
Fascinated or patiently waiting for a trap to explode on?
Oh, wow. It's the former for me. Like, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, where it's like, they are just without their three best offensive hubs. Like, this is going to be quite the opportunity for Tobias Harris in particular. But I'm not going to be mad if Shake Milton averages like 17 points while shooting 36% from the field. Like, you don't sign him to be your second option. So, like, I'm not judging harshly. I just want to see functionally what the offense looks like. What are they trying to get to, and how do they go about getting there? It's kind of want to see what this looks like. Because I don't know, like, Tobias Harris is likely going to be your top scorer or your top scoring option. How much do you let Shake initiate? How much do you let DeAnthony initiate? How do you mix that in? Like, I'm just curious to see what Philadelphia looks like.
I think this is why it's important to have something that elevates your star or stars, or a scenario where your star can now elevate your team, and some of these teams are going to have to find that mix base-wise. So I guess I'll ask you this real quick. What do injuries do to your analysis of a team on their journey?
For me, like, you throw grains of salt in it first and foremost. Like, if you're missing your primary offensive hub or your primary defensive hub, if things slip, I'm not calling your team bad because they slip, because it's obvious why it slipped. I do want to see, like, okay, what does your versatility look like beyond what your star or big piece brings to the table? Like, for Boston, like, Robert Williams III isn't their best player by any stretch of the imagination, but he's out of the lineup. You miss that vertical presence on both ends of the floor. Okay, what do you do beyond that? How do you react to that? What do you do differently scheme-wise? Who steps up, et cetera, et cetera? And so for me, it's just trying to see how you go about filling those gaps, how viable those options are. But as far as, oh, this team lost four straight because they're missing their best player or their best playmaker or best shooter or whatever, like, I don't really penalize that heavily. It just kind of banks in, like, oh, if anything, I'll have a greater appreciation for the guy that's out, where it's like, oh, without him, all of this looks a little bit different. This is why they're able to generate many shots at the rim, because they have this guy drawn too consistently. And that might be something that hadn't popped as strongly when they were in the lineup. So I think that's mostly where I go with that. What about you? How do you approach that?
For me, it's just trying to track the progress. What are they trying to do differently? And where are they improving? So for me, I'll take a team that got better, even if they don't get all the results. You know, if your defense is now really good and you're bringing your people back, that's fantastic. Or if you found more answers to your rotation, you found something offensively where you're having to play a certain style. Now you can bring the better, or quote unquote, the better players into that mix, and that pays off down the line. It's a chance to answer some questions without some pressure. And then you could always just find your way, you know. If you get your team bought in and you're able to perform, that can lift you going forward.
Right, right. Okay, let's talk about the on-court product with the players that are left and not on the injury list right now. Steve, who has stood out to you as of late?
Beam me up, Nikias.
We back. Second on the Kings, huh?
Yes, we were talking about the Kings. What was it? A couple weeks ago, they were making me think. I was looking at that pump fake and I was closing out. And boy, have they lost since we talked about them last?
I don't think so. This is a six-game winning streak for Sacramento right now.
What's that, their first six-game winning streak since you've been alive?
Oh, wait a minute. It hasn't been that long.
Oh.
This is slander some kind of way.
Oh.
I don't know which side of the aisle I land on. This is slander somehow. Continue.
Those are the best kind. I do have one thing for you. So right now, there are three players averaging 25 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal, and shooting 50% or better. Did you know that De'Aaron Fox is on that list?
I do now.
It's him, Giannis, and Steph.
That's really good company.
And this Kings team has been fun to watch. And I think we should enjoy it, embrace this stretch. The success is coming with it, but it's just been fun. I think De'Aaron Fox's growth has just flown under the radar. I mean, he's shooting 50% on catch and shoot threes, according to NBA stats. That's up from 35% last year. Still shooting 50% from two on mid-range pull-ups. 48.9% of his points are coming from the paint. He's got a nice little blend going. And I think the Kings' overall philosophy offensively is really helping him. So it's a situation where he's gotten better, but they're also putting him in stronger positions to succeed. He is carrying so much less of the weight in just pick and roll. It's not just that. It's not, hey, make a play, and it's a drop, and hey, please make a play. There are more things he can do. There are more reads he can make. There's more ways he can attack and transition and in the flow. Their drive and kick philosophy is allowing him to get kicks now. So now he's able to either catch and shoot or attack a scrambling defense. That's a big key right there. And then he can still bring the pick and roll to the table. So he has the reject. He can come off a little bit slower and read. He's using the changes of speed a little bit better. He's making more reads when he gets downhill and making the skip pass a little bit quicker. I think obviously Sacramento kind of chose him to a degree, and him playing well is probably big for them as an organization. I have also really liked this year from Domantas Sabonis. And I say that as the chief person who loved this trade, saw the vision, was immediately upset and angry for at least 8 months. Wondered if they thought he was just Alex Lynn. I was concerned about the usage. I think he's only shooting about 10 times a game, which feels like the lowest in years. But he's just such an important motor and hub for them. Like, the handoffs easily jump off the page. But here's the thing about Sacramento. They will not hesitate to dump it to him in the post. And he will still just hit folks left and right. And the fun part is just how they branch off of pieces of his game. So he'll post you up and hit you, get to the line or score. Then they'll throw it back into him. Now you got post splits you got to deal with. Then they go to him in a handoff. Now they run a different play. He flashes to the elbow if that doesn't work. He's just constantly involved. If you start thinking about doubling the post, he's just spraying it out there. It's great. So, and my favorite part, Nikias, is when he gets a rebound and he pushes it in transition, you don't know what's about to happen. It's how I wish Bam did it. But yeah, those post-ups are important because for some teams, they're not going to switch as easily. That's the one thing I do want to see with Sacramento. How are they going to handle switches? Because at some point, some teams are going to be like, hey, we're not dealing with any of this. We're going to switch everything. You guys try and figure it out. But those handoffs just help the Kings' movement and flow. And you have guys who are now able to make easier plays. Kevin Huerter, Malik Monk. They can come off downhill and make the right read. It's not stagnant. It's not just pick and roll or bust. They're playing outside of that play. And top to bottom, this roster, everyone kind of is doing their job, right? That was not rhetorical.
Oh, well, yes, they are. I thought you were about to continue your point.
I am. Gosh. Kevin Huerter is shooting the heck out of the ball. Keegan Murray, we've talked about his versatility this year. Harrison Barnes feels like he's kind of finding the gaps where he can just be Harrison Barnes.
He's back.
As opposed to trying to do entirely too much. I've liked Malik Monk off the bench. Davion Mitchell's defense is insane. The Metuverse is fun. Trey Lyles just does his job. Sure, hey, I'll knock down some corner threes and play some defense for you. That's fine. Like, it's funny because it's a talent league. I'm not going to go that far to ever ignore that point. But there is such an underrated factor of having a group of people who know what they're supposed to do and they just do it. And this is a spot where I think Mike Brown has put things in to help this team. He's recognized who these guys are and he's put them in positions to succeed. And that's a spot where you're going to get the most out of everyone. And we've talked about it. If that kind of group gets early success, you never know what that's going to build. So when you watch the Kings, yeah, the winning is great, but look at the ball movement. Look at the drive and kick. Look at their effort on defense. When a team goes on a run, are they hanging their heads? Do you ever get the Kangs feeling when you watch them?
Haven't gotten it yet.
Feels different. And so that's important. It's just fun. It's fun. We can talk about defense here real quick. I know that's important to you.
Yeah.
There is an effort defensively.
There is.
It is not always perfect, but there is an effort. So you're seeing a lot more activity, a lot more ball pressure, more help is being shown. You're seeing at least an attempt at multiple efforts. You're seeing multiple schemes. Now, I don't know how much you love any of them, whether it be Sabonis in the drop or Sabonis at the level or Sabonis trapping, but they are throwing it out there based on personnel, which is important during the course of a season. I'm sure you have concern about the impact on the ball or the help behind it, but hey, the fact they're doing it is a plus. I think probably the number one thing with the Kings defense for me, the recovery needs to just be a little bit better. Like the boost with the early help has been good. Showing your bodies early is great. Being in the right position is great. But that recovery, it just feels like they're either a magnet to the action and they're late to get out, or when they do get out, the closeout just gets beat. And now it's like, okay, y'all need a third level of help. So they're building there. But the Kings are fun.
The Kings are indeed fun. Just to kind of look at them broadly on the season, they are second in offense. They are 27th in defense. And I think just generally, I want to see which number normalizes first and where it does. Like, are the Kings just solidly a top five offense? They have the talent to do so. And if they're going to shoot like this, they very well could just be a top five defense just during the winning streak. De'Aaron Fox, 40% from three on over four attempts. Harrison Barnes, after a dreadful start to the season, 42% from three, also getting to the line quite a bit. Kevin Huerter continuing to fling it up, 47% from three on seven attempts. Malik Monk shooting 38% from three. Terrence Davis shooting 57% from three. Keegan Murray shooting 37% from three. If you're getting that kind of shooting, in addition to the blend that you were speaking of offensively, to where sometimes it's pick and roll, sometimes it's handoff, sometimes it's pure post up, sometimes it's post splits, the randomness and the snappiness that they're playing within the half court, it just kind of invigorates the group. And to your point, when everyone knows, okay, this is all I have to do here. If I run hard, if I relocate with purpose, if I screen hard, I will be found because De'Aaron Fox will find me. Domantas Sabonis will find me. And then defensively, if I can just be where I need to be, we can disrupt enough to get out and run. And that's really where we're going to have fun. That's De'Aaron Fox getting downhill. That's all of these shooters filling the lane. That's Malik Monk or Terrence Davis either filling the lane or getting downhill themselves. Domantas Sabonis, if he's grabbing and going, he's pushing it all the way, getting to the line. He's diverting, going right. Quick pitch is a drag screen. Now it's a quick pick and roll. You get downhill. It's finding a handoff partner flowing into that. If a smaller dude picks him up in transition, it's okay. Well, let me get to the 3-point line, turn my hip. Now you're on my hip. Now it's just an impromptu post up. Send help or else. It's just a lot of fun. The defense does worry me, though. I don't think it's not an effort issue. This is just where, okay, the personnel just kind of is what it is. And even if you're throwing out multiple schemes, which they have, if Sabonis is in a drop, it's a problem because the vertical pop just isn't there. He doesn't disrupt guys at the rim. If he's at the level, which I think is his best coverage personally, you do have to trust the help behind them quite a bit. And that help is either young or also not, the strongest at the rim. And so I do wonder, like, they're 27th overall right now in defense. Can they get to 20? And does that just entail the current group playing better? Is it getting some better shooting luck from the opponents? Is it making some sort of, doesn't have to be a big trade, but some kind of minor move that could help stabilize some things? Because I think they're still trying to sort out who their backup five will be full-time. But we haven't seen much of Alex Lynn. Rashawn Holmes is just not in the rotation. Love Chimezie Metu. Like, I think him at the five brings more value offensively than defensively right now. And so, like, maybe that's just part of it. Like, can they figure out something there? But, zooming out, I have really enjoyed watching the Sacramento team. The offense just flows so much better. And again, it helps when everyone is burning the nets from three right now. But just from a process standpoint, it's felt a lot better. It has been better utilization of Domantas Sabonis. If he's your security blanket instead of your best player, it makes a world of difference because you can utilize him in so many different ways. Like, you made the stat, you talked about how many shots per game he's taking. Like, he's at 9.3 during the win streak right now, which is low. Now, that's buoyed by he's averaging nearly 7 free throw attempts, so it's not just 9 shots, obviously. But even there, it just feels like, okay, we are going to build the boat around you. We got it. And if we don't have it, we know you got it. And if he accepts that, like that, and he has to this point, Like, that's a fun option to have. So I'm with you. The Kings are fun. Eyes on the defense for sure. But
I do have a quick question for you.
What's up?
What do you think is more likely? The threes come back down to earth or the defense gets better?
I guess for me, it's like, what does down to earth mean? Because like Kevin Herter can shoot. Is Kevin Herter a guy that's going to hit half his threes on extremely high volume? Like, probably not. But I also look at the effort that this team plays with, and even with some of the limitation they have with the personnel, like it's hard for me to say they're 27th. Like only three teams are worse than them defensively. So I think it's more likely that the defense goes from 27th to like 24th, just based on what they're building. That buy-in has just been there from day one defensively. So I think I'll bank on the defense, or at the very least, I'll bank on the defense and defense improving more than the shooting drops, if that makes sense. Where's your comfort level? Where do you go?
I probably have my concerns if teams start to figure out how to defend them more than the defense. Like, as long as they can keep rebounding, they'll be all right. Now, if they just get back to breakdowns and giving up boards. But for me, it's like, okay, I love the offense. It's fun to watch. What happens when a team kind of figures it out and throws a punch that way? It says, hey, we're just going to switch everything, try and get your flow down, bog you down. How do they handle that punch? Because it's coming at some point.
Yeah. And I think to that point, you kind of get to test, okay, how strong is the resolve here? What is the blend? Because you talked about De'Aaron Fox at the top, living in the paint, bombing away from three, has the nice mix of when he's going to his pull-up. If teams just switch, okay, what are you going to do? Because you could just speed by just by anyone you can who's guarding you. Are you going to keep the head down? Or will it be a bunch of ISO pull-ups? Which, if they're going in, great. If not, what does that do? Because the Kings aren't a team that crashes the offensive glass super hard either. And so to your rebounding point, they're number one in defensive rebound rate so far this year, which they need in possessions, get out and run, get into your early offense. They're not garnering a ton of extra possessions outside of Sabonis. And so if the offense does dry up and you're not getting those extra opportunities at it too, now it's just on your defense at that point. And the defense has not been great yet. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that. But again, the Kings they're playing really well right now. They're having a lot of fun. Did you have any other quick shouts, or is it my turn?
It's your turn, man. Who you want to talk about?
Let's talk about the Los Angeles Lakers very quick. You have the embargo. I do not. So I will give them the quick shout right now. They are winners of three straight right now. You can poke holes if you want to. Beat the Nets by 13, second night of a back-to-back for the Nets. Beat the Pistons. Cade is out right now. Absolutely blast the Spurs on Sunday night. We had a watch party for it. No Jakob Poeltl for that one. But it's less about, I guess, the quality of the win and more so just what they're doing from a process standpoint. Like, I have been very impressed with the buy-in from this group generally. Even when they haven't shot well, the defense has just kind of been there all year long. The defense has remained strong during this stretch. Offensively is where I am intrigued with this Lakers group. There has been no LeBron for a little bit right now. This is a Lakers team that you zoom out on the year, they are second in pace. That pace has plummeted over this win streak. This has very much become a half court. We are going to run the offense through Anthony Davis group. And he has delivered. 35 points, 18 boards, two blocks of steal, shooting nearly 80% at the rim. The mid-range jumper is back right now, shooting 50% from mid-range during the win streak. Average shot distance for him is a little over 6 feet. That is a career low for him. He is manning the paint in a way. Like, this is top six, top seven Anthony Davis right now. And that feels conservative with how he's dominating inside. We talked about this during a watch party. Just watching where Anthony Davis is catching the ball now has been such an improvement from what we've seen in years past for him. Because I don't think giving Anthony Davis the ball and clearing aside is inherently a bad thing. I think it's inherently inefficient offense when there's a clear out where he's catching the ball 19 feet from the basket and now it's jab and jumper or whatever the case may be. If he's catching the ball 8 feet from the basket and now it's, I'm putting my shoulder into you, I can get to the hook either way, or I can face up now, one dribble, I am at the rim and I am getting fouled or I am dunking on you. That is different. And then when you're sprinkling in the jumper there, and again, it's falling right now, there isn't much you can do with Anthony Davis. So I've really enjoyed his play, and defensively, he has remained stout. The guy that can navigate a drop very well. They've had him at the level and dropping back on some occasions. He's swarming. He's doing his job on both ends of the floor. And then you zoom back out, Lonnie Walker flying around in transition when the Lakers do get out and run now. Because again, they aren't pushing as much as they were pre-Bron injury. But Lonnie Walker flying around in transition, three balls going for him. When he's operating off the ball, coming off the screen, he is getting downhill with some real juice, can flow into mid-range pull-ups or can get all the way down to the rim. Austin Reeves getting a little bit more on-ball responsibility. The pick and roll between him and Anthony Davis, quietly a very good combination. I am intrigued. Just the reads in general from Austin Reeves have been very good, and he's competing on defensive end as well. Russell Westbrook coming off the bench, just injecting all sorts of energy. We talked about it when he first made, when Darvin Ham first brought him off the bench, just the level of energy that he's injecting. I think we were talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers game from a couple weeks ago. We just came in and instantly changed that game. And he's dancing after and ones. That's kept up. And to the point about their pace overall being down right now, he is someone that just revs it up when he comes on the court. And so when you're getting that blend, in addition to the defense, like, again, are the Pistons world beaters? No. Is this version of the Nets who didn't have Ben Simmons, however much you want to put salt in that? Is that a world-beating win? No. But I am seeing a team that is that has played well defensively all year long. An offense that has, they're still working through how good their shooting is overall. They aren't worst shooting team in history right now, which is a big plus. But just seeing them shift from, okay, we're going to lean on the defense. We're going to get out and run as much as possible. And then we'll go from there to, okay, we don't have our top dog. We're still going to lean on the defense. We're going to walk it up. We're going to run it through Anthony Davis, low post, high post, run some elbow action for him. We're going to get guys moving around off the ball. We're going to grind it out, but it's still going to look good. Seeing them being able to toggle between how they want to approach things offensively, I think is encouraging. And as they get healthier, I feel like that's something that they can build from. So I've had a lot of fun with this Lakers group as of late.
How do you think this Anthony Davis is sustainable for the Lakers? Is this the Anthony Davis that they have been trying to get to? Because he's been on a monster tear over the last three games. Is this him? Is this them? What is your take on it?
I don't think 35-18 is sustainable. I do think, depending on what your line of construction is, like, some of this is just Anthony Davis. Like, work harder for a post position. Like, some of this is very much him. And, like, even, again, I've cited the average shot distance stat. Like, this is the first year since 2016, 2017 that he's had a three-point rate under 10. Like, he's pretty much taken the three-point shot out of his diet, which is interesting to me. But, like, some of that is just shot selection. And then, again, once he does get those mid-post or low-post touches, like, what he's doing with it. Is it a stagnant isolation where he's just going to jab and take a contested jumper that he can make, but from a process standpoint, you don't love that. He can just be more aggressive. I think a lot of what I've seen from Brown in terms of how he wants to play is sustainable. Now, it's still going to be on, like, there's, I don't want to say it's a ceiling, but with the level of shooting that they have on the roster right now, like, there are still safeguards to help from and make things tough for him. And even when adding LeBron back to the mix, like, LeBron does occupy similar spaces as Anthony Davis. And so there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment when he comes back, I feel like, to sustain this kind of play. But for Anthony Davis himself, like, I think he can maintain a lot of what he's doing.
I do think it's interesting. You make some good points. But one thing that stood out to me, even going back to the preseason, is you could tell he wanted to be more aggressive and try and get to the line more. And it didn't necessarily work at the start of the season. So during this four-game little mini B stretch, I guess we want to call it that, he's gotten to the line 11 times, 7 times, 21 times, and 6 times. That's 4 straight with 6 or more free throws. Now, if my addition is correct, before this stretch, he'd only done it 4 times. This season. So I wonder if that's the thing. Is he finally going to get the payoff for the drives? So now that balances out some of the face-ups, some of the mid-range. But I mean, if he's going to do this work on the glass, I mean, hey, it's a different story for me. It's a new month. I didn't talk about them this month. I'm a little intrigued by some of these lineups they keep throwing out here.
Oh, let's hear it.
I mean, shout out to Austin Reeves and Lonnie Walker, by the way, just putting their head down, doing stuff. That's fun. But you got, you know, I think it was the Detroit game. Oh, I look up, there's Russell Westbrook on the floor, and there's Dennis Schroeder on the floor, and there's Austin Reeves on the floor, and there's Kendrick Nunn on the floor, and there's Anthony Davis. And I was like, huh, this is intriguing. Like, I feel like they come close to just like finding stuff. Like, I've liked Russ just come off the bench and hit the turbo button right away. But then we also have Dennis Schroeder, who can also hit the turbo button. Like, that feels like it could be a fun duo. You know what? Actually, I'm not even going to wait till the later section. I don't know what's up with Kendrick Nunn, man.
Ah, I see. Well, he is a basketball player for the Los Angeles Lakers. He is one of the players in the NBA.
He's shooting 30% from three this year. He's averaging, what, an assist a game? Shooting 36% from the field. Which box are you falling into?
It's going to be the box that is behind the Dennis Schroeder minute box if the shooting does not come around, is the answer to that question. But I think the theory of Kendrick Nunn is, hey, here's a guy that can shoot, but more importantly, hey, here's a guy that can knock down pull-ups for us. So everyone that runs the ball screen for us doesn't see an under. He's a change of pace guy. The defense is not good. And I'm not sure why that became a bit of a talking point over the offseason. Like, that has never been the portion.
It's probably your fault for tweeting some clip when he was in Miami.
Oh, God. No. No. Like, the Kendrick Nunn is an interesting defender thing ended for me like month one of his rookie campaign. I was like, holy crap, who was this guy who just made the roster and started knocking down threes all over the place? This is cool. And then you start paying attention to the screen navigation. It's like, oh, he dies on a lot of these. He's trying. And then the Miami stretch continues. Like, oh, this is just the portion. He's just not that good at it. So I don't know why it turned into he's going to help the Laker defense in addition to the shooting, because that was never the... At any rate, if the shot's not falling for Kendrick Nunn, you just have better guards. Like, even if the shot is falling, you can argue that they have better guards between Russ and Dennis Schroeder in particular. And one, it hasn't super mattered in terms of coverages yet, but worth noting, Russell Westbrook shooting well from three since coming off the bench for the Lakers. Like, that helps. Even if he isn't seeing aggressive coverage or aggressive closeouts, they need those points. And if he's knocking down those shots, that empowers the Lakers to say, okay, we'll play you and shoot Dennis together. Because if nothing else, if we can get stops, y'all are going to be incredibly annoying to deal with in transition. And if we run something through Anthony Davis and doesn't work and we kick it out, we can still generate some paint touches, which to that point, during this recent stretch, over 44% of shots from the Lakers are coming at the rim, which is first by a significant margin. This is how they want to win. Like, going back to the actual title year, and again, I don't think this is a title team as currently constructed, but just in terms of how they want to win, they sized up during the title year, like, okay, you're not getting to the paint on us. We are going to clean the glass. And then on the other end, we are going to live in the paint / free throw line. And they are, in a different way, trying to follow that formula to where we don't want you to get busy at the rim. This is why we have Anthony Davis where he is. And this is why we have him at the level sometimes, why we have him in a deeper drop sometimes. You're not getting at the rim. And Anthony Davis has responded with great rim protection and also tying his career high in terms of rebounds per game. And on the other end, Russ can still get downhill. Dennis Schroeder can still get downhill. Austin Reeves being a little bit more intentional about getting downhill. Lonnie Walker, whether he's relocating because his guy is helping off somewhere else, or if they're running him off of a pin down, he can come off the curl tight, get downhill, and get to the rim. Anthony Davis, again, post-ups or drives, get into the rim. This is how the Lakers want to win. And in theory, once LeBron comes back, you're adding one of the greatest rim threats the league has ever seen. He's not that guy right now at this stage of his career, but he's still a guy that can get downhill and bully people and generate more paint. So I think the Lakers they're finding stuff. I think it's the most positive thing I can say about the stretch overall. Like, they're finding how they want to go about their business.
I got you. LeBron comes back, it's got to be him coming in for Troy Brown in that starting lineup, right?
That would be my guess.
I've exhausted my Laker talk for this month, so.
Ah, I guess that is going to do it. All right. Let's go to the teams that make us stink. I have two. We'll go very briefly on one, though. The Chicago Bulls. How concerned are we with Chicago?
How concerned are you?
I have some concerns about the way that the offense is functioning.
Okay, which part?
Yes. No, I would say in general, like last year we talked a lot about how do you blend these three players together?
Mm-hmm.
Nikola Vucevic, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan. And you would think in year two that there will be a better feel for how they're flowing in between actions. And it still feels like a lot of defaulting to DeMar DeRozan or defaulting to Zach LaVine or something static with Nikola Vucevic. And I don't love that. And that's made further complicated by the fact that we just don't know which version of Zach LaVine we're going to get on any given night. And I say that, recognize, like, this is like 98% just health related. We just don't know what the knee's going to look like. And that's a big issue in the short term. And also just zooming out what you think the ceiling of this team is going to be. Because the intrigue with Chicago, if they hit on some of their younger pieces, and we still very much have the eye on what Patrick Williams is going to become, I'd assume it was just good. But if they are able to hit on these pieces around the margins, and you have this versatile big three offensively, Vooch can be used in multiple ways, can shoot, can post, can use him as an elbow hub. Zach LaVine can come off screens, can run pick and roll for you, can isolate. DeMar DeRozan can use him to post up smaller guys, can just isolate, can run pick and roll. In theory, like, this is how you grow. You build some kind of identity on both ends of the floor. You defend well enough, with Chicago 12th in defensive rating right now. They've been in the top 10 for most of the year. That's interesting to me, but the slide is happening. But you defend well enough, you get all this happening, this is how Chicago reaches their ceiling. If the offense is going to be stagnant, and then one of your big three members is just going to be in and out of the lineup because of health, or not super effective because of the health, that lowers the ceiling quite a bit for me.
I'll ask this question. How much do you attribute to, I don't think this is a trio they anticipated on putting together. I think it's a trio they were just able to put together. You know, they had LaVine, they were able to get Vucevic, and then DeMar wanted to come. So this is what we got. And this is the tough part. We get talent and we got to figure it out. So I think they have skill sets that can match. Vooch has been up and down aggression wise to me. And it doesn't help that teams are just now like, you're a switch now, my guy.
Yeah.
So there goes your pick and pop and pick and roll with him. So now you either have to force the post up and make him think twice or something else. Zach LaVine, people forget how high of a level he was playing at. But since the injuries, he's been trying to find it. And then you have the other wrinkle of DeMar being insane for two straight years. Like, I don't think that part was calculated in the math. I don't think they saw him doing this. So how do we now tilt this offense? Because DeMar is insane. We're trying to get Zach back, but does he have the burst back? Is this going to be a pull-up? We're trying to get Vooch going, but how do we do that if teams don't want to cooperate? So how much of it is just an odd time for these three to be together? Or am I shooting entirely too much bail?
No, I don't think you're shooting entirely too much bail, but I think that's a fair read on it. And I think this is at least some of the worry that people with, I guess, with the three in general, like, okay, how does it work? Can you mix this together? Because I think the skill sets themselves can mesh, but it still takes time for you to figure out how you want to use those and have the kind of blend that you were just talking about Sacramento having. To where, like, that's two instead of three. But, okay, these are all the things that De'Aaron Fox can do. These are all the things that Sabonis can do. We can see, you know, zoom out. Okay, this is how these two work together. But how do you build a system that empowers everyone? And I think Chicago is still very much there. And the health just throws an extra wrench into it because you just don't know who's going to be there. And with Zach, I just hate it for the knee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the knee is just such a... like there are basketball things to talk about. Like we want to talk about the 1-for-14 game that led to some interesting post-game comments from Zach. We can. But like so much of it is just, we just don't know on any given night. One, is he going to be in the lineup? Because they started the year managing him. He missed what, the first two games of the season? And it's like, oh, well, that's not ideal. We thought that's what the off-season procedure, and thought that's what that was for. So we wouldn't have to do that. So you start with that. And so you don't know if he's going to be in the lineup, period. And then when he's in the lineup, you don't know if it's he feels good enough to go or he feels good. It's very obvious when it's, hey, he feels good enough to go, because you get the game to where he can get to a spot beyond the arc. He can boogie behind screens and get to that pull up, or come off of a pin down and get to one of those fading threes that he's really good at knocking down. But then where are the rim attempts? Where are the free throws? Or even just in the paint, not necessarily all the way to the rim. What those attempts look like? And that also just kind of, if he's there, you're playing him 30 plus minutes, unless you sit him down like Billy Donovan did in the last game. But if he's on the court and he's just in, I feel good enough to go mode, he immediately becomes a target defensively, which isn't great when teams already look at Nikola Vucevic as someone that you can get good shots against. Whether he's in a drop or they have him close up to the level, we know he can get something. If you're putting those two in action together, or if you're really good to get funky, you have someone else in Vucevic in action. We go, okay, we're going to make Zach make decisions from the weak side corner. And we're going to have our big role. We're going to have the guy Zach is guarding lift to the wing. Let's see what the lateral quickness is like. Let's see if you can tag and get back. It's just tough. And now I look at where they are health-wise, where they are conceptually, and then looking at the rest of the East, which is jumbled up right now because half the conference got off to a middling start. So like Chicago isn't out of it. But I think they're currently in the play-in right now. But you just kind of look and it's like, okay, what is the ceiling of this group? Can you even peg what the actual ceiling of the group is? And if you can, is that high enough to build around this group? Or do you consider something bigger? Like, I don't know how fair that is to ask in November.
The other thing is the Lonzo part.
Yeah, that just, yeah.
That's where it changes the math for me, fairly or unfairly. I think he was a very big glue element on both ends of the floor that kind of flies under the radar. And everything you said, it's a weird blend right now for Chicago. So last year, let me make sure I got my numbers right. You know, me and the Kyalytics don't always vibe.
So here we go.
So this year, they're 22nd in offensive rating, 12th in defensive rating. Last year, they were 13th in offensive rating, 23rd in defensive rating.
And the defense slid after Caruso got Grayson Allen.
Yeah, it's flipped in a weird way because the pace hasn't changed for the Bulls. It gets stagnant at times, but you do see attempts to try and move the ball. The percentage of their field goals that are assisted are up this year. It's a weird deal. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of it. Just like, I don't know what the ceiling is. I don't know which part needs to fix. Did they overcorrect too much? Did they focus in too much on one part of it and lose a piece of it? What's the simple fix? Their defense isn't bad. Is it good enough to let them get out and run as much as they need to? Yeah. Is this just the half court being, hey, someone cook? Like which button do they kind of shift to make it work? Because it doesn't feel like they're incredibly far off. But then it's like, okay, far off from what though?
Yeah, see, that's where I keep getting. And like, I'm trying to be careful in how I frame this because I'm not trying to like slander the Bulls or anything. Like, I feel like, again, Lonzo having the injury issue that he's had, like the most you can say is, hey, you should have looked deeper into the New Orleans stint and the medicals there. Like, again, I don't have background on that, so I can't even say that with like full force. But I feel like if you're going to criticize that, that's as far as you can take it. But ultimately, that's out of Chicago's control. With Zach LaVine, like he literally had a procedure over the offseason to fix this because he was playing through the knee issue literally last season and last postseason. And if he still isn't right, I can't say that's anybody's fault. But ultimately, Zach LaVine is, like, at worst, you want him to be your second best player at worst. And Lonzo was wildly important to what Chicago wanted to do last year. Guy that shot threes, he could defend one through three. His ability to make event, his ability with event creation, making steals, some weak side reputation flashes, that allowed them to force turnovers and get out and run, where Chicago was incredible in the open floor. You take him out of the equation, you take Zach LaVine, or the healthy Zach LaVine, out of the equation at the very least. Your defense doesn't force the same amount of turnovers. You don't get out in transition as much. It's more in the half court, and then one of your top half court options is gimpy and can't get to the rim to get you easier shots. Is that anyone's fault? No. But this is where we're at. And I don't, again, it's November. We can record this, get out of Thanksgiving week, and then Chicago wins 6 of 8. And it's like, oh, cool. Zach feels better. There's better blend offensively. They're getting enough stops. They're good. But right now, it's just like, okay, what do you make of this group? Considering what the draft class is, can you even find a way to play in to get into that? Because I think their pick is Orlando's. I think it's top four protected, top five protected. The only way they keep their first rounder this year is if they're really, really bad. So I guess the really big picture question is, like, do you look at how things have started record-wise? You look at kind of the status of some of your top guys. Do you pull the plug now, or do you give it more time?
You know who the coach is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to compete their way out of that. Yeah, that's it. hey, no, well, you know where he left?
Yeah, that's pretty true. That is pretty true. Which, for the coach, actually, I'll flip that question to you then. How have you felt about Billy and how he's handled the Bulls this year?
I feel like he's been fine. I just think it's been a lot of whack-a-mole for me. You're trying to figure out the lineup combinations, trying to get the right things going, trying to deal with different guys in and out. So I haven't had a problem with it. I mean, what are they? They're 6-10. They've lost 4 in a row. It's not the best start, but give or take 2 games, it could be right where the Sixers are, the Raptors are, the Nets are. So, I mean, what, they lost one of them Pelicans game by 4, lost the Magic on that buzzer beater, 2-point loss to Washington early. Flip those, they're in a different spot. So I think it's just which button can they hit to turn things around. I think they have the pieces they want. I just think the offense just needs to be a little bit more smoother. They need to get their tempo back up, and they got to compete defensively. They can get that under control, they'll look different. And then we can go back to the conversation of what's their real ceiling. They just got to get back there. And it's never good when you lose 3 out of 4 at home.
Yeah, you feel that a little bit more. Especially the Orlando one.
That's your team.
I mean, yes, but like also, that's a tough way to go.
And hey, you got to be ready from the start. I mean, you're down 14 at half. You get beat. You had to rally to get back into it. So now it's, hey, respect the game a little bit.
Respect the game.
What, I read the memo. We're good.
Yeah. I love how I started it off with, yeah, this is going to be a brief thing on the Bulls, and it turns into an entire conversation about their direction.
Now, so guys, you can ask any dunker. Anytime we say something's going to be brief, it's never brief.
That's pretty true. It's pretty true. That's where I am with Chicago. They're making me think a lot. And then I will go to the Western Conference, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Ah.
Also on a winning streak right now. Now, granted, to beat the Cavs by 5, there was no Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen in that game. Beat Orlando, no Paolo Steele. They beat Philadelphia. There was no Tyrese Maxey or James Harden in that game. So can poke holes in it, but 3 wins are 3 wins. I guess for me, it's trying to gauge the guard play with this group. I think it is very clear that D'Angelo Russell is a very important part to what they do. It is no coincidence that in these 3 wins, he averaged 20-8 and he shot 47% from 3. He drives a lot. And that's one thing that seems obvious, but it also terrifies me based on how he's played overall this season. The decision-making has not been great for him. Defensively, this is just not the same D'Angelo Russell that we saw last year on defense. Like, part of that is just the defense is just flat out different. So he has different responsibilities. But off the ball, the communication just hasn't really been there. The awareness hasn't been great. Like watching the beginning of the Cavs game in particular, and he's just losing dudes. He's passing people off and then still not being aware of where he is. He's getting back cut. I kind of worry about that. And then I'm still just trying to figure out which version of Anthony Edwards we're going to get. And the decision-making for Anthony Edwards has just not been good for most of the season. That doesn't mean he's always going to be a bad decision maker. That doesn't mean it's not going to improve this season. But you know, 6 o'clock Eastern on November 21st, it just hasn't been a good decision-making season for him. And it really stands out in pick and roll when he's operating Rudy Gobert in particular. Like, it's become a meme with him not passing Rudy the ball. But, like, something that we've talked about on here is, like, okay, what is Ant's pacing in pick and roll? Like, beyond how the skill sets mesh, I think what makes, like, the Edwards Cat pick and roll work in particular, aside from Ant can get downhill and Cat can shoot, is that because of Cat's skill set, it doesn't really matter how quickly Anthony Edwards goes. He can put a guy on his hip, kind of slow play it, and then make the pass, or he can just hit the turbo button and get downhill. And it's fine. He can't operate the same way with Rudy Gobert. And I feel like that kind of, I feel like that frustrates both of them, honestly. Just watch the body, just watch them operate pick and roll together. And watch Ant try to figure out how quickly he can go. Watch Rudy Gobert try to figure out, okay, what is the pocket here? How quickly can I roll? Do I need to speed up? Do I have space to speed up and get downhill quicker to make myself open? And then it goes into, well, heck, is Ant even going to pass on the ball? That's just been weird. It's been a very pull-up heavy season for Ant, which isn't super different. But I just find that part weird. And then defensively, zooming on Minnesota, like I don't feel bad about the effort like I did in earlier parts of the season. But just still trying to track the progress of toggling between multiple schemes. When is Cat in the drop? How is he navigating the drop? When he's at the level, what does the backside look like? When Cat is off the ball, how well is he navigating screens? They put him there. And so I just, even with the wins, there were enough what the heck is happening possessions in the wins to where I was like, okay, is this getting better or are they winning the games they're supposed to based on who's out? Like the latter is still fine. The wins count the same. But that's kind of where I'm just like, okay, is it getting better?
Very interesting, because literally the only thing I had typed out was, is this as simple as Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell playing better and being more involved, or is this a case of matchups that may have helped the Wolves' two big lineups win?
When you do the podcast with someone long enough.
So, all right. I don't know. I think the issue, and I'll ask this question, I don't want to echo too much. At this point, are you just okay with Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell flying off Rudy Gobert's screen and saying, I'm just going to shoot? Forget all this nonsense. Forget waiting for, I'm just going to shoot for a little bit. Or we're going to do it that way. We're just going to simplify it.
I don't love that. Cause like you need to involve, if Rudy is just going to do that on offense, then you really shouldn't have made the trade. Because you make the trade because of what he can do for your defense. And also, well, the screening is going to help unlock things. He's also just a better roller slash finisher than Jared Vanderbilt. That should add another dimension. If it's just we hope he helps the defense, yeah, you can absolutely press the button on the trade and everything they gave up if that's going to be the mindset. They have to find a way to involve him in pick and roll.
I think D'Angelo Russell is still his best pick and roll partner. I know no one wants to hear it. But that's the person that's going to get the coverage, that's going to let Rudy roll. And he's got the knowledge when he wants to in his reading to manipulate and get him open.
Yeah.
I don't think that Anthony Edwards is the best pick and roll partner just because of Anthony's mindset and the speed of Gobert's role, and especially the positioning. So if you want to put those two together, you need to put them lower on the floor. You need to manipulate the situation a little bit more. A high pick and roll between those two just doesn't have a lot of outcomes. If Rudy's going to set the screen and Ant's going to come off slow, that rolls, they're going to have time to help, or he's going to snake it. So put him in different scenarios, different spots on the court. Make it lower. Make it more of a threat to where either of them can make an easier read, unless you just want to watch these pull-ups. But my question was, if they need to play well for this to work, and they're just saying, hey, we're going to shoot for a little bit. I don't know if that's the end of the world. But now I'll ask this question to you as well. What's more important to you? Figuring out the Gobert and Towns minutes or making the ones where them by themselves elite?
I think it's going to be more important to figure out those two playing together. Because I think in the absolute worst case, you get to the playoffs, like you're closing with just one of those guys anyway, in the worst case. And I think that's always going to be in your back pocket. You can't get to the point to where you are trying to, okay, we can, if we can just hold this to 18 minutes together and then split it up the way, if you got to do all that, then again, you look at what you gave up and it's like, oh, that's not ideal at all. You have to be able to get to 24 minutes with those two together or 22 to 24 minutes together. I think it's important that you figure out how to make that work.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Okay. We can handle this 5-minute stretch. These guards do some things. Maybe we get a couple rolls, a Gobert flare for Cat. Now we got Cat the five. We run all that stuff that you loved last year. Now we got Rudy back in at the five, and he's rolling, kind of, or at least the defense is pretty good because he's a rim protector. I don't know. I might lean towards just having a really good big on the court at all times and hoping the 3 minutes works out.
I think that's a fair position to have. Ultimately, if you get one of those from Minnesota, like you're fine with it. I just think it's more important. The ceiling is higher if you can figure out those two together. And so I think you, in light of they didn't get much time together during the offseason / preseason, I think it really is important early on. We need to figure this out. It may get ugly. We got to figure this out.
I can't blame you for that. But again, I have respected Minnesota's attempts to at least, okay, let's try this. Like, for example, in the Philadelphia game, you got Gobert handing off to Russell. He sets a screen for him. Cat kind of sets Stack's main pick and roll. Mainly, he was just in the paint. But that was enough of an illusion to get Rudy a roll for some help and get a kick. And I've liked some of the stuff where they've used Rudy as a screener to get Cat off flares. Now, how much you like those shots, that's up to you. But
again, I do like the concept of those.
There are attempts to, okay, let's try and lock these things in. But I think for me, you need your guards to play well. You got to get your defense in order. And if you can find a package for when Rudy's at the five, I think you can cook with something that'll work out a little bit better for you. Obviously, big picture wise, you do need to solve these issues, but I think that can at least give you a little bit of a bridge while you're on your way.
I got you. I have a thought and also a Nikialytic, I guess, if you want to, if that's what we're just dubbing these now.
Yes.
So thought/question for you. Should they just, instead of going with Gobert, or I guess Edwards, Gobert, pick and rolls. Should I just run more Veer and get Gobert screening for Ant that way?
He's much like Porzingis and Beal, or Porzingis and Kuzma. I think the best way to unlock them is going to be with off-ball screens. Now, that is going to require either some manipulation or Ant setting up and coming off with some pace. But I do think that's a way to get things open. I think that's a way to get Rudy another role anyways. Utah was really good as they continue to develop of mixing in those off-ball actions. So, hey, this is us letting Rudy roll without us telling you that Rudy's about to roll.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Okay. But I think there just has to be, they got to figure that out too. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they got to figure that out. Feels like a great tagline for the team. As far as the Nikialytic, I was looking at some pick and roll stats via Second Spectrum. D'Angelo Russell is passing on roughly 37% of pick and rolls he's running with Rudy Gobert. Do you want to guess Anthony Edwards' number?
Run that by me one more time.
D'Angelo Russell runs a pick and roll with Rudy Gobert. He is passing the ball 37% of the time.
How many times is Ant passing to Rudy?
Yeah, or just passing in general.
About 7.
It's not that low. 19%. Oh. There's a very, very big gap between the two in terms of pass frequency.
Oh, my bad.
No, it's fine. But it just kind of drives home the point. Russell's the best pick and roll partner. The pull-ups and just the willingness to move the ball, even if it isn't to Rudy himself, just making those kicks, that's just kind of where it is. Anthony Edwards very much, at least when running pick and roll with Rudy, he's very much one-track minded right now. And I think you would like to see more development there between those two as the season goes on. But those are kind of my Wolves thoughts, just the guard play in general. And again, tabbing the bigs, how they're playing together, how they're operating together, particularly offensively. That's all I had on Minnesota. Let's get into your teams. Who'd you have on the list?
I had the Cavs. This is because I think it's been a very important and interesting stretch for them. They had the 5-game losing streak, where you lose to the Clippers by 2, or you lose to the Kings by 7, although that was closer. Lose the Dubs by 5, Minnesota beat you by 5, Milwaukee just beat you. I think it's an interesting kind of thought process during this stretch for them, because losing 5 out of 7 is not ideal, but you did start 8-1. This has been a good opportunity for them to learn and grow. And I feel like they are having this combination of trying to figure some things out on offense, while also dealing with some injury stuff, while also dealing with your defense taking a step back, which you, that part you can't really afford. I think you understand that now. Fortunately, you got to lose to kind of get that, but they can't take a step back defensively. And that kind of makes it a very interesting night in, night out type deal. And so it's just kind of interesting to see how they prepare and recognize more teams are going to be coming for them. More teams are going to know what they're doing. Just a little bit of fun adversity. Like them and the Hawks, I'm watching how they build and handle these type of stretches on the fly as you're putting things together. So I'm not down on them. I mean, you come back home, you win 2 games against the feisty Hornets, who apparently are just going to score and compete and then not win time they play.
I mean, that's, you know, again, you look at the draft class. Is that a bad thing? You build some good habits and then you put yourself in the conversation for Scoot Henderson, because
the most important thing is they are competing every single night. And then you just deal with Miami deciding to try and zone you and leaving them off the floor. So I'm thinking about the Cavs right now. Not down on them. I'm just thinking about them. The other team I had.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, you got Cavs thoughts?
I have a Cavs question for you.
Oh,
before you move to the second team. Why do you think the defense has slid?
Well, I think Jared Allen being out didn't help. I think the injuries to their bigs hasn't helped.
Okay, so just subtraction of the forces. You don't see anything else. Okay, that's all I want to get your thoughts on. You can go to your, that was my only big question. You can go to your second team.
Oh, the Clippers.
Ah, we back.
So I was thinking after our path to success conversation from the last pod, I go back to the Clippers. To me, there's been some meat that they've left on the table early in this season. I haven't loved the offensive pace. I think it's been slower than it could be. I feel like the tempo hasn't been where it needs to be. Been concerned about the movement, the paint touches, the defense kind of goes in waves sometimes. Lineups have been all over the place. Then I thought about it for a second, right?
Okay.
Some of this had to be expected. We talked about half of it on the preview pod. We talked about having to figure out the lineups and the rotation. We knew Kawhi was going to be coming along at the right pace, all that good stuff. Now, guys, they're 10-7. They're 1.5 games out of the one seed in the West. And Kawhi Leonard has played a total of 4 games. And he's back. He's back still, right?
Allegedly.
I muted injuries, so I okay. All I know is they're 3-1 when he plays. So they're right there, and they haven't played their best basketball. Like, it's felt like, hey, let's find some defense, get some ones in transition, get some bucket getting, call it a night. But their defense is 2nd in defensive rating and 1st in opponent's points per game and 1st in opponent's field goal percentage. Are we sleeping on them or what's happening?
I think it's one of those things where maybe it's been kind of understated how good the defense can be. Like, we talk about the wings, and all right, bet, you got a whole bunch of dudes between 6'6 and 6'9. They can switch everything. They can throw out 27 different small ball combinations. And then it looks ugly because everyone's the same size. And then you also don't have Kawhi. And it's like, oh, wait, the flip side is still, that's still true. Like, I remember episode a couple weeks ago, like, I was thinking about the Clippers. I was like, hey, so the defense, they can throw out these different coverages, and it feels like they're toggling coverages because whatever's happening in the first quarter isn't working for them, versus we're switching it up to throw you off balance. And then I made a note towards the end of that where I was like, I'm saying this and they're still in the top 10 right now, but this is just something that I'm keeping an eye on. And sure enough, that seems to have stabilized and they are second in defense. And now we're just waiting on the offense, which I'll throw you a quick question. In terms of lineups, how have you felt about Reggie Jackson and John Wall playing together?
Together, like at the same time or just in general?
Together. We'll bring that question back.
I feel okay with it. I mean, if they're going to be in each other's way, at least let them be in each other's way together. Maybe we'll get some level of aggression. But though, I feel like one of them is really good or the other is really good, but never at the same time. So maybe let's see if they can just do it at the same time if they're out there together.
Okay. But yeah, to the offense.
Your thoughts?
No, I feel it. Like, I think for me, it's trying to find, I mean, it's bouncing off what you said, like trying to find a way that both of them play well. Because it still feels kind of my turn, your turn-ish, whether it's a quick outlet after a defensive rebound or just whoever gets the inbounds, like I am running the show. This is my position to do something. And I think both of those guys are rhythm players to a degree. Like John is way more willing to pass than Reggie Jackson is, and just a better passer, period. But like John needs the ball in his hands. He wants to feel how it goes. So he knows he's throwing those corner lasers, make sure it's in the pocket and all the good stuff. He wants the ball so he has a rhythm. And Reggie Jackson wants the ball to find a rhythm so he can cook. And it's kind of hard to blend those two together while also having Paul George like 30 usage. And again, you absolutely defer to Paul George because he's the best player on the team, or the best active player on the team, rather. But it's weird trying to toggle all of that. They may get there. But I think that's where kind of the weirdness comes in, to where it's like, okay, cool. John Wall shooting well this game. Reggie Jackson has just been on spot up duty because John has it going. He's making good decisions. Or Reggie has knocked down 4 pull-ups in a row. Now John Wall is just chilling on the perimeter because he's not doing anything. Like he's not the most active cutter. He's not that. It's Reggie's turn. So I would like for them to kind of blend it in. To your point, this is where increasing the pace would help. They don't have to run like the Lakers, but they can get into the half court stuff a little quicker. So you can at least get that involvement, at least get some rhythm going. And so if the ball does swing second side, John's just ready to go, or Reggie's just ready to go. You're able to find a blend that way.
No, it's an interesting point. And I get back with the Clippers as far as it just feels like some people are in each other's way to a degree. But I mean, a very Clipper deal is Reggie Jackson scoring 20 points on 11 shots and then John Wall having 15 assists in the same game. Like, I feel like both of them can do the thing that they are being asked to do for this team. The problem is they are both on the same team. Like that feels like the issue to me. Have they scored double digits in the same game once this year?
Oh, that'd be a fun thing to look up.
I'm trying to see it real quick, doing some real quick math. I'm not sure. Oh, Lakers. They both did. Lakers, November 9th. There goes the fun there. And the Spurs. They just beat up on the Spurs. Golly. Now, the flip side with the Clippers is they're 2-4 against teams that are currently 500 or above, and 8-3 against teams that are below 500. Which, hey, you only play who you play, but also, like, you lost to Phoenix, you lost to New Orleans, you lost to Utah, you lost to Brooklyn, you lost to Dallas, you lost to OKC twice.
Darn right.
Your wins are like 3 Houston games, 2 San Antonio games.
And this is why you can be 10-7 with a .1 net rating.
Oh, you love to see it.
That's how that works. But
I will be thinking about them.
No, I think that's fair. But like, to that point, even you play who's on your schedule, and it's important for you to bank in those wins while you're sorting through, hey, is Kawhi okay? Hey, is Paul George okay? Hey, we have 13 playable dudes. So like, no, it's not ideal to have a losing record against teams above 500. But if you're taking those losses early in the season while you're very much in experimentation mode, okay, like you take that in November. I would be more concerned if Ty Lue came in with, this is the team that we're going to play every night, and then they still went 2-4 against teams by 500. And then it's like, okay, wait a minute. What is your process against these good teams? What are you doing? What is the ceiling here? for me is more so been, what are they trying to accomplish right now? And who's leading the race for eighth man, ninth man, tenth man? And how does Kawhi's absence, or when he does play, like, how does that affect who gets the nod in the lineups from there? And so that's, I also have the brow race with the Clippers, but that's kind of where I'm just like, all right, let's just see it for now. And we'll see how healthy Kawhi is and just how healthy they're going to be in general. Cause I think that's going to be that's probably going to be the biggest driver of what the firm rotation is going to be as we hit like January, February, March. Which, speaking of that, I just didn't have, we talked about it on the preview pod about some of the small ball lineups. Like, I think we both had Robert Covington in some of our ideal lineups. It's very weird that he's just not in the rotation. Like, I wonder, does he work himself back in, or is he just already one of the odd men out and they use him plus someone or just him to get something to solidify something else with? So I'll just keep an eye on that, but that's just odd.
I don't know if he's the odd man out, or more so you just kind of know what he can do. And so we need to see what else is out there potentially. That's my guess. I mean, it's not like Batum's playing the heaviest of minutes either.
That's true.
So it's like, I think it's more, can we get Terrence Mann going? Let's give Terrence Mann a stretch and see what he's got, what that looks like.
Makes sense.
That's my guess. I mean, he's got to make these kind of decisions throughout the season to figure it out. So come playoff time, he knows what he has. But I wouldn't say Roko's out.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move to the players that impress. Steve, who do you have on your list for this recent stretch of games?
That makes sense. That means stop talking. I got you. put that in the terminology.
Maybe season three of the podcast. I don't know how to affirm it. We'll figure it out.
Quick shout out to Derek White. He's got double digit points in five straight games. I feel like he's just done a little bit of everything during this stretch for the Celtics. And it's been fun to watch him get these minutes, play this defense, make these plays, hit these shots. So I wanted to give a shout to him. Malik Beasley,
like this,
aka Malik Threesley.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. I got four more made threes in six of his last seven games. I believe he leads the league in three pointers off the bench. So I wanted to give a quick hat tip to him. Tyrese Haliburton.
Player of the week.
Player of the week, Tyrese Haliburton, I believe leads the league in assists with 10.4 a game. Leads the league in points and assists, double doubles. So he is firmly unlocked for the Pacers. And then Klay Thompson.
41.
Yeah. 41 piece for all y'all out there. His belief was much stronger than your doubt. Much stronger. 9 flex emojis.
Not 9 flex emojis. That's amazing.
Man, hit 10 threes. He had enough. Done with y'all. That's the 6th time in his career he's made 10 or more threes in a game.
That's insane, by the way.
Very much so. Even crazier, Steph is first with, I believe, 22. I had to check that 4 times.
Even more insane.
And no one else has more than 3.
That adds to the absurdity. Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
Steph, large gap. Clay, large gap. 3. The Splash Brothers, indeed.
That's all I had. Who you got to rock our socks off with?
Rock our socks off. That's amazing. Can I just say, like, with that Rockets game where Clay and Steph just go off, like, I tweeted out what death taxes and Golden State absolutely clowning Houston. And the amount of replies, they're like, they only won by 7. Yeah. That means I wasn't referring to the score then, if it was only a 7-point game. Like, we all saw the Steph 3 to cap it off.
You didn't like that trip to baggage claim, did you?
Trip to baggage claim. I was just like, why would I be referring to a 7-point deficit, a 7-point win against the team with the worst record in the West right now? Like, why would that be why would that be considered clowning? Like, give me some credit.
You are not Paul Wall. You are not the Peaches fan. I'm gonna quickly read some of this. Nikias has Houston fans upset. Had this in the draft for 12 hours. Not you, Nikias. Give me a break. T- took this performance in a dogfight against the worst team in basketball. Delete.
It's like,
needed a miracle shooting night to barely beat a Rockets team.
Like, why would that be the point that I'm making? That's what gets me. Like, defend your team, obviously. But, like, why would that be the... Golden State really went off with that 7-point win. That doesn't even sound right.
70 from seasoned vets in order to beat 20-year-olds by 7. Yo. They packed you up a full meal.
It's like, what does that mean? Okay, anyway, that was my brief aside. Shout out to Klay Thompson. Belief over doubt. There we go. We're starting with Ben Simmons.
Hey.
We are starting with Ben Simmons. Touched on Ben Simmons' impact in Brooklyn on the last episode, as I shouted out Brooklyn in their recent run. 16-9-5 are your averages for Ben Simmons over the last three games. Just capped it off with 22-8-5 on 11-13 shooting against Memphis. Now, granted, Memphis, they were missing some players. But as we have seen over this recent stretch of games, feels like every game, Ben Simmons getting a little bit more aggressive, screening with a little bit more force. Again, the roles we're keeping an eye on, but rolling with a little bit more force, more consistently. Driving with a little bit more force. The defense coming back, the aggression rising up a little bit. And now you're starting to see, like, the traditional box score numbers reach this. And so I am excited. I want Ben to continue playing well. So we're going to start with Ben Simmons. OG Anunoby, who has filled in admirably while Pascal Siakam's out. Since Pascal's been out, averaging over 22 points a game, 6 boards, nearly 3 assists, still playing incredible defense, 2 steals at a block, taking on a high minute load while doing all this. He's being asked to defend up and down the floor. He's getting more creation reps. The drives quietly looking a little smoother. Like, I made the joke about his balance when he's getting downhill and how he's able to be knocked off of spots despite being one of the strongest players in the league. That seems a little bit more refined. Free throw attempts going up, averaging about 5 free throw attempts a game during this stretch since Pascal's been out. I am impressed. Campaign, the other CP, averaging 20-6 since Chris Paul's been out, shooting nearly 46% from 3 on over 7 attempts. He has filled in well, kind of carving up drop right now. That's been fun. Bones Highland, forgot to mention up top, Nikola Jokic, been dealing with COVID. Or been in COVID protocols. He's also one of the players that's been out missing games. But whether Bones has been given the ball with the bench unit or jumping into the start lineup, he's been bombing away, averaging 20 points and 4 dimes in November right now, 47% from 3 on over 8 attempts. Before I move to the next player, how have you felt about the Bones-led bench units this year? Because it feels like he's played well, but it also feels like he should have some more help in the second unit to take some of the creation burden off of him. How have you felt about the balance?
I have liked it because it gives him more of a runway to be himself. So I've liked it from that perspective. I think last year there were some pieces in the way and he kind of got that opportunity in a different way than maybe you would have wanted. So let him go be him and maybe you mix in MPJ if you feel like it's too much, but I'm cool with it.
Okay. I want to get your thoughts. Last guy I had, Bol Bol is continuing to put up numbers. He is averaging 18-11 over his last 5 games. And I think a double-double in 4 of his last 5, if I remember correctly. Shooting 44% from 3, the 3-point attempts are going up. Zoom out for the year, he's averaging 13-8. A 69.4 true shooting percentage. Bol Bol becoming a useful NBA player this season. Becoming a starter this season has been one of the most fun stories that I've had the pleasure of following this year. Warms the heart.
Was this supposed to be the KZ Akpala section?
Hey, man, KZ might help that 27th-ranked defense in Sacramento. I don't know. But we are talking about Bol Bol right now. Very impressed with what he's putting together offensively. Defensively, still some question marks in space, for sure. He's swatting everything, but if you're able to get past him, it's just kind of tough. So I say useful. A little bit of work to go before we get to just he's good. But
no, it's fun to see the potential actually turn into that. So I understand where you're coming from. I did have a quick Ben Simmons point.
Okay.
Because I saw one play, and I saw all I needed to see.
All right.
Well, one, his reaction to being asked about the return trip to Philly let me know, okay, I think he's in a better place.
Yes.
But he's a lot more active. He looks a lot more like himself. Now, I'm not even going into the debate on what that means, but he looks like Ben Simmons. He's playing with a purpose. And there's a play against the Grizzlies. He pushed the ball up with speed. I think he did a dribble handoff with Joe Harris. Nothing was there. He got it on a pop. There was space between him and Steven Adams. He went right to a drive, with no hesitation, hit Steven Adams first, and then went into some variation of a fadeaway or a post hook. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I was like, ah, I have seen everything I need to know. He is moving in the right direction.
There we go. And that's all you want from Ben. You want that aggression. We know what the actual like skill limitations are for him right now. And there are stuff he still has to work through. But you can't have that and also be tentative. Like, it's understandable why he was early in the year. And he hasn't played in a year. So it's going to take some time for him to work himself back. But seeing the aggression and the decisiveness pick up for him, it's exciting stuff. I have one player that's made me think. We'll go back to Toronto. Gave OG some praise for how he's played since Pascal Siakam's been out. Brow is raised with Scottie Barnes right now, who's been given more on-ball responsibility because, of course, he has. During the stretch, not shooting particularly well. 14-75 since Pascal's been out. 39% from the field. 29% from three. And I am just trying to parse through second year Scottie overall. But with this stretch, it's very much him, like he's learning on the fly. And we're seeing him stretch his wings. And these are just growing pains for him. But while looking at these growing pains, I'm trying to parse through how much of this is him and his limitations that he has to work through, and how much of this is the content. And I come to that question because let's go to Saturday against the Hawks. Shorthanded Raptors team can just throw their entire team on the top part of the dock in terms of injuries. But Scottie had, I think, 28-11-9 in that game. Cool. He went 11 of 29 in that game. 7 of 21 from 2, 4 of 8 from 3. Took two free throws in that game. Not ideal. Made a lot of positive plays. There was also the missed layups at the end of the fourth. And then there was whatever he decided to do on the AJ Griffin game winner, in which every time I watched that possession, something else stood out. It was odd. But the play that really stood out to me the most as I went through that actual game, because live, I just saw fourth quarter no time. First shot comes with like 9 minutes left in the first quarter. Atlanta scores, is inbound to Scottie Barnes, trots up court. Clint Capella picks him up. It is a pull-up 19.5, 20-foot jump shot, like 17 on the clock. And I'm just like, okay, wait a minute. What are we doing? You want the aggression from him. You want him to comfortably get to his spots offensively. I just wonder what those spots are and like how he's able to generate. If he's able to shift that more downhill. And so I'm just in a weird spot. Like, I don't think he's bad or anything like that. Like, he's obviously playing without his best player, who took some pressure off of him. And we know what the half court context for Toronto is in general. And so, like, it's not a big penalty or anything like that. But it's just like, okay, what is Scottie processing? How is this progressing for him? Is kind of where I land. How have you felt about Scottie Barnes on offense this year?
He's fine. I'm not doing this. I'm fine with Canada today.
What does that mean? You gotta be slandered. I'm just like,
no, I'm not judging his process until everyone's back. He's going to end up doing a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's probably going to look like he's doing too much, because who else is going to do it right now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not. In a vacuum, this is an opportunity for him to do more. So, jury's out for me. I just love that. I love that the process led you to dislike a 28-11-9 game.
I don't even saying I dislike it overall, but it's just like that just stood out. Because I think just zooming out, even when Pascal was there, like he was getting to the rim less than he did last year. Like, I applaud the aggression with the jumper. Like, the three-point rate is just up for him. And even on the year, shooting 35% from three. You want that boost from him. Because heading into the draft year, it was, hey, Scottie can rebound, Scottie can defend, Scottie can play make. He would do all the little things to help you win. We don't know how he scores. And that's what made the rookie year so exciting. Because, oh, wait, here's the pull-up midi that he's comfortable taking. Nick Nurse yells at him. He's taking corner threes more good, with more frequency. That's cool. He can get into these random post-ups. And four dribbles later, a couple of half turns later, he's at the rim. Neat. And so now I'm just kind of keeping an eye on, okay, how does he expand from there? And to your point, with Pascal out, this is room for him to – this is just room and more reps for him to take. It's not going to be perfect. I'm not expecting perfect. But the shot selection and just the decision-making in general, like, that's something that I was keeping an eye on heading into the year to begin with. And so now that he has this runway, it's just evaluating, okay, what has he done? What are the areas of growth? And so I'm just kind of peeping, okay, can he get downhill more? What does the handle look like in year two versus year one? Probably not where it needs to be for him to get to any spot that he wants right now, and that's fine. You hope he gets to that point. But you kind of see it more now that he has more attention on him with Pascal out. And so that's why I have, again, a player that's made me think, not Scotty's bad or anything like that. Just intrigued. That is all I have. I love how quiet you've been here. Like, hey, nah, that's him, Canada. That's tremendous. But no, that's all I have. Do we want to move into free throws to close this out?
Yes.
Do you have free throws?
Of course. Do you have free throws?
I do have free throws.
You want me to go first? Is that what you're saying?
I can knock him. I think I have a shorter list than you. I'll go first.
Okay.
Why don't the Hawks want John Collins?
That's got to be a scheduled tweet at this point. I don't understand how we arrived at this point. The Hawks were fine. I was literally just like, hey, this is kind of nice that they're not doing the Trae Young or John Collins thing. And then immediately the John Collins thing comes out. And I'm just like, what?
And it stinks, like, this is the year that he's not making threes.
I think he's just the easiest name to throw in there. So it's just buzzworthy, I guess. I don't know, man.
It's just, right. Well, on a related note, who gets traded first, John Collins or Miles Turner?
That was my first question.
When you do a podcast.
Long I'm going Miles Turner.
Okie dokie. Rank these vibes right now. Chicago, New York, Miami, Houston.
Ooh, give them to me one more time.
Chicago, New York, Miami, and Houston.
New York 4, Chicago 3. Houston 2, Miami 1.
Okie dokie. D'Angelo Russell or Terry Rozier?
Ooh. Give me Terry Rozier.
Okay. Will PJ Tucker actually get to do stuff with the ball now?
No.
All right. Rank these players. Franz Wagner, Scotty Barnes, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley.
Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Franz, Scotty Barnes.
Okay. Your thoughts on Laddergate?
Can we not? Why is this a thing? Why are we doing a whole free throw in the bank ladder match? It's just petty basketball stuff. Philadelphia beats Milwaukee. Giannis wants to go outside and free throws. And this is y'all's fault because y'all always sitting there recording stuff after practice and after games and posting it, and getting the dopamine, and now everybody's addicted to the grind and look at me on the treadmill. Go eat something.
Go eat
something. Go text someone. Go hug someone. Go enjoy life. Now Giannis wanted to go out there and shoot some free throws on the main court. And then I am certain someone was like, hey, put the ladder up. Giannis was like, nah, dog. And Montrezl Harrell was like, nah. And that was it. Petty basketball things. Like, these things happen all the time. You ever seen coaches argue over who decides where the defense is going to start? Oh, we know they like to do defense up first, so we're going to have them flip it. It's just stupid basketball stuff, man.
The hashtag is big ladder match.
I don't know. Man, I once asked for a DVD when I was on the road of a game that I needed, and I got an episode of Walker Texas Ranger.
Wow, that is actually a petty basketball thing. That's insane.
It'd be like that, dog.
Wow. All right, that's I was not ready for that anecdote at all. That's amazing.
Stop overreacting. It's not a thing. Just laugh.
Okay. There we go. That concludes my list. You can go.
Are you prepared for Dylan Brooks' time?
I don't think it matters if I'm prepared for Dylan Brooks' time. That's just kind of what the clock says.
How many times do you think Nick Nurse watched the last play of that Toronto Atlanta game?
I think he had that on a loop on the plane. Hey, Scotty, come sit with me. Let's talk about it. Where were you going?
How quick did the Lakers say no to the Spurs offer for Russell Westbrook?
I feel like that was a unprotected. Absolutely not.
I'm sorry. That's one of the top 10 most trade finder trades of all time. we can get Russ?
Someone still has to trade finder difficulty on 50. Bump that up to 80, dog. About to find out what it really is.
What was more surprising to look at in this Portland Nets game? Royce O'Neal getting a triple-double or Ben Simmons dropping 15, 13, and 7?
Definitely the Royce triple-double. And he got the triple-double off the game-winning tap. That's what he got, the triple-double with some style.
I was not prepared for any of that. It was a lot to process. When I saw it in tweet format, I was like, wait, all this happened? All right.
Same game, huh?
Bet. Is Marjon Beauchamp everything people wanted Matisse Thybulle to be?
Yes.
Ouch, that was quick. Does Bones Highland give you Lou Will vibes?
No. He's got to get to the free throw line. He's got to grip more.
Guess the ball does stop. Halliburton Fox won player of the week. Who won that trade? The Kings or the Pacers?
Yes.
You tweeted, imagine how dope it would be if they were on the same team. Why'd you do that?
I wanted to get a very low effort joke off.
Okay.
And it turned into, well, you see, it was bad when it happened. But yeah, we talked about it on the pod. Anyway, continue.
Is Dwight Howard just playing NBA 2K19?
Yes.
A Wilder tweet, Asia Wilson saying the South Carolina Gamecocks were going crazy without half of those words, or you tying in a Ray Allen tweet with a Ben Simmons quote?
I'm gonna go with the Asia tweet. Reading that without context is insane. I scrolled. I was like, I knew what she was talking about, but I scrolled, bro, refreshed my main timeline and saw that up top. I was like, what? But like, it also didn't surprise me. She's done stuff like this before.
Give me something in your life that will make you react like John Lucas did to that Steph Curry 3.
Oh, Jesus.
It's food for me. It's good food for me.
Good food. Mm-hmm. I was immediately going basketball related.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, okay. Well, we get out of here soon. All right. Well, I will also say food.
For no, that. I need a real answer. When you beat the rock up in God of War, what you did, man?
No, I beat God of War. I am retiring. I'm like ordering a custom made championship belt. It's gonna be insane. That game is insane, man. Get God of War. It's a really good game. For anyone who hasn't bought it yet, it's really good. It is really good. Just, it's really good.
So what is it? Basketball related that makes you do that?
Oh man, you give me a good bowl pull up, man. It's cooked. Did you see the shot that he made over Miles Turner? This man went behind the back, step back, pull up three in his face, or pull up jumper in his face rather. It's nasty stuff. Continue.
That's all I had, man.
We start with Bol Bol, we end with Bol Bol. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Also, leave us a review. We like those. But we are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter for now at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community for nonsense, analysis, and everything in between. Hop in with the Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having lots of fun there. Again, analysis, vibes, dairy products, plus minus talk. If you know, you know. And with that, we will catch y'all a little later in the week.
A bowl of bologna.